We need folks that have a fire in their belly and really want to do this work. Healthcare's got a lot of problems right now. We need people that are willing to really roll up their sleeves and do some hard work.
You want someone who's experienced, who's curious, and doesn't have a big ego or a fragile ego, somebody who can share the credit, but deep down has the self-confidence.
Hello, and welcome to the Better Care Podcast, where we share the stories and insights of clinicians, healthcare leaders, and innovators who are improving the way clinicians work and deliver care. Today, we have a really exciting special episode diving into the path of becoming and thriving as a chief medical officer. And I have three CMOs that are going to help us do just that. So let me briefly introduce them before we jump into today's episode. Dr. Rex Hoffman is actually going to be our guest host and facilitator today because he authored the book, I Want to Be a Chief Medical Officer, Now What? And that just came out last year. And his co-editors, Drs. Doug Cook and Mark Olsik, have joined as well to provide their insight. So thank you all for being here today. Let me briefly introduce. First, Dr. Hoffman is the Chief Medical Officer at Providence Holy Cross Medical Center in Los Angeles, California. He earned his medical degree at Tulane School of Medicine and is a board-certified radiation oncologist, and he has served in many clinical leadership roles across Providence Health System for over a decade. Second, we have Dr. Cook, who has served as Chief Medical Officer at Providence St. Joseph Health and as the Chief Physician Executive at Peace Health. He received his medical degree from the Oregon Health Sciences University, and his clinical practice in internal medicine included inpatient and outpatient care before transitioning fully to hospital medicine and then moving into administrative and physician leadership roles. And last but not least, Dr. Olsik is the Chief Medical Officer and VP of Medical Affairs for Carroll Hospital in Westminster, Maryland. He earned his medical degree from Columbia University College of Physicians and Surgeons and an MBA from the University of Phoenix. He also wrote the book, The Chief Medical Officer's Essential Guidebook, which was partially co-edited by, you guessed it, Dr. Hoffman. So we're in good hands today, as all of our guests have given a lot of thought to this topic and have distinguished careers working in various leadership roles. So please be sure to check out the show notes for their full bios and link to their books, as well as some more resources. But without further delay, Dr. Hoffman, the stage is all yours.
Ben, sir, first of all, thank you for allowing us to join you on this podcast. I know I speak on behalf of myself as well as my two co-editors. In 2023, one of the panelists, Mark Olsik, and I worked together to create the book that you heard mentioned, The Chief Medical Officer's Essential Guidebook, which was designed essentially to assist chief medical officers already in the role. Shortly after the book was published, Mark and I, plus four other authors from the book, served on a panel at the annual AAPL meeting, which is the American Association of Physician Leadership. In the audience were chief medical officers, but also a large group of physicians aspiring to be a chief medical officer. It was at that time I had an aha moment. There was no book in existence for this latter group of physicians, no guide on how to become a chief medical officer. As a result, the book, I Want to Become a Chief Medical Officer, Now What?, was born. The book was really designed to answer a lot of the questions that physicians aspiring to be a CMO have, such as, what is the CMO role? What do they do? When is it the right time to transition? In terms of applying for the job, how to interview? How to prepare your resume? How to land the right job? And then we also sought advice from several physicians in different CMO roles, CMO of a hospital, a medical group, a health plan, as well as a health system. So today I'm joined by my two co-editors, Drs. Olsik and Cook. And they're going to share with you some of their thoughts on some of these topics. And hopefully you'll feel inspired as a result. So let's get started. First question to Dr. Olsik. What advice would you give to a physician aspiring to become a chief medical officer?
So, well, I guess I would buy your book, Rex, and I'd read it cover to cover. I wish I had a book like that when I was thinking about it. I was in leadership roles from about a year out of my residency because I was in the Navy and then joined the Department of Veterans Affairs. And about 12 years ago, the position came open for chief medical officer at my current facility. And I didn't really know what the role entailed. So I remember now I called the previous incumbent who had left and taken on a new job. And I just, you know, I asked him. So if I were to do it again, I probably would ask even more people. I remember I did a lot of research. I found out who was going to be in my interview panel, and I used the internet and looked them up, and I, you know, memorized all the statistics of the hospital. And I even did like a secret shopper visit. But my advice would be to other aspiring CMO applicants, candidates, to widen that field even more and call up CMOs at nearby hospitals, other hospitals, maybe get permission from whoever's going to be doing the interviewing to, you know, talk to some people in the community, because you really want a right fit. It shouldn't be a surprise. It's not a bake-off. You really want to do your research. And I think whoever's on the interviewing panel would applaud that. So, you know, find out as much as you can about the job in particular and the role of CMO more largely by speaking to people who are currently in that job.
Thanks, Mark. Great advice. Certainly advice that I would have benefited from as well when I first started out, that we just have access to either one of the books that we discussed earlier today. Dr. Kukic, let me turn it over to you. One chapter in particular in this book that we're talking about has received a lot of positive feedback is, and one I know most physicians aspiring to be a CMO really, really struggle with, is when is it right to make the transition from being a clinician into the administrative role as a CMO?
Yeah, thanks for the question, Rex. Again, I'd echo Mark's comments. Read the book. I mean, there's a lot in not only my chapter, but the other chapters to describe whether you're ready for this. I think one of the things I'd say up front is not all CMO jobs are the same. So are you ready for a hospital CMO? Is it a little different question than a medical group CMO or a health plan CMO? But if we're primarily talking about a hospital CMO, I think it starts with sort of some critical self-reflection of, do I have the right experience? And when I say experience around this, I think primarily around medical staff affairs. Do you understand how the MEC works, the elected chief of staff or president of the medical staff? Really successful CMOs have frequently sat in those chairs, so they understand how to do peer review, how the P&T committee works, how department meetings run, those sorts of things. So I'd say, you know, that sort of level of experience is almost essential to being a really good hospital CMO. And then layered on top of that would be, do you have some experience doing quality or safety improvement? Do you understand the accreditation process, either through DNV or Joint Commission? Those would be other things that I think would be kind of staples and would kind of land in that bucket of, do I have the necessary experience to be successful? The next question really, though, is more introspective, and that's, am I ready to leave clinical medicine? And that's probably the toughest question. Professional satisfaction as a physician is pretty immediate. You perform a successful surgery or you get someone out of heart failure, and right away, you know if you did a good job. Being a physician is a lot of our identities as you've gone through all that training, residency, and you're stepping away from a lot of that. And the professional rewards for being a CMO are very different. They're also terrific, but it's a different timeline. You know, it's, am I making things better for a generation of patients or a community? Am I setting up systems to treat sepsis better rather than treating a single patient with sepsis? Those sorts of things. And so you have to be ready to sort of let go of the immediate positive reinforcement and take on this longer timeline for the work that you're doing. And for some people, that's really hard. And the next thing I usually ask people to do is really to say, is the organization ready? And again, this comes back to not all CMO jobs are the same. And if this is your first CMO job, you want to make sure that maybe this isn't the first time they've had a CMO. And do they have support staff? Is there a budget? What's the reporting structure? Asking all those questions and making sure you're not stepping into a big mess as your first CMO job, I think that's critically important too in weighing that decision. I think there's questions for your family. You're going to trade sort of the predictability of, I mean, maybe you've had call responsibilities every fourth night or every fourth weekend, those sorts of things. And what you're trading off is maybe you're not on call as often, but the days are long and somewhat unpredictable. And you never know when there's going to be a major medical error in the hospital or some media event. They're going to call your name and it might be 8 o'clock at night. And who do you have to watch the kids or to take care of the dog and those sorts of things? I mean, you need to ask some of those questions because it's probably a less predictable schedule than what you had as a practicing doc. I think that you have to ask yourself, are you ready to lead? There's folks that aspire to be a CMO at the end of their career because they think they've earned the title. They'd like to coast into retirement. They've been a member of the medical staff for decades, so I'm going to be the CMO. That's not really what healthcare needs today. We need people that want to lead, that are okay to embrace change and be innovative and think about how we can do things different and better. So I think that'd be the last question I would ask folks is, are you ready to lead? You got to have that fire in your belly and you really want to change things, I think, to be successful. And so anyway, there's a little bit of rambling there, but I mean, it's a big question about whether you're ready to take a CMO job. And I think those are some of the things that I would sort of tick through on my checklist.
Absolutely, Doug. And it is a complicated question because so much goes into it. Not every person is dealing with the same sacrifices that they'd be making to take on a CMO role. And you're right, the chapter in the book really goes into a lot of this detail as well, some additional things you didn't get to, as well as your personal experience. So thank you for your contribution to the book on this. Let's kick it over to Mark. When interviewing physicians for a chief medical officer role, and I know you've been involved in many interviews in the course of your career, Mark, what do you look for?
Well, as Doug said, you have to have the requisite experience. It's funny, he was talking about familiarity with departmental meetings and MEC. And yeah, at this point in my career, those things are as second nature as, you know, making breakfast. And it's hard for me to realize that anybody doesn't eat and sleep and breathe that stuff 24/7 like I do. You didn't mention, but, you know, implied is, you know, getting ready for Joint Commission and OPPEs and hospital quality. So definitely somebody who has that experience, having done the job now for over a decade, and not saying that I possess these qualities when I was interviewing, but I think that what's important is to have a certain maturity. So you have to have self-confidence, but be able to let go of your ego. And that means not always seeking to take credit for things. So to be a great leader, you have to create other leaders. So I'm constantly praising publicly my departmental chiefs and say, wow, what a fantastic job. If I get recognized by somebody from corporate or the president, I make sure to say, hey, it's a team effort. And I really have to recognize the efforts of our chief hospitalist. They've come a long way. They're the ones doing the actual work. You want someone who's going to share the credit, be able to talk up their team members, someone who makes the team great, because you don't always have the tools at your disposal to reward people. I can't give my chief of medicine or chief of surgery some nice monetary bonus, but I can give them an award. I can talk them up. I can, you know, mention their name in front of the board of directors. And hopefully that makes them feel like their efforts are appreciated, they're recognized, and there's some meaning in coming to work and doing what they do. Same thing for the rest of the medical staff, the rank and the file, but, you know, and also the nursing staff, environmental services. I think one of the great advantages of being a chief medical officer is you get to go anywhere in the hospital that you want to. So what I really enjoyed most about being a fourth year medical student or being an intern is that you rotated through all these various parts of the hospital. You know, Doug mentioned there's a tough transition from leaving, you know, 100% clinical medicine to administrative. And that's true. You do give up some of the immediate reward, especially in emergency medicine. But what I've retained for my specialty, emergency medicine, is that I'm still able to interact with every single specialty. Not everyone gets to do that. My good friend, the chief of pathology, you know, he's in the basement all day and he loves it. But when he was president of the medical staff, I said, I think you need to see other parts of the hospital. He had never been to the behavioral health unit and never really been to radiology. And on any given day, I can go to all those areas. If I want to scrub, I can go into the OR and observe a surgery. But I also can walk into the foundation. I can walk into finance. So I think when you're looking for a candidate, you want someone who's well-rounded, who feels comfortable interacting with the entire breadth and depth, not just of the medical staff, but all the members of the hospital, as well as patients, as well as media. So you have to have somebody who's multifaceted, and above all, someone who's curious. Because if you're curious, that's going to make you open to all kinds of conversations on many different levels. So you want someone who's experienced, who's curious, and doesn't have a big ego or a fragile ego, somebody who can share the credit, but deep down has the self-confidence to be able to drive projects and drive improvement.
Yeah, Mark, that's great. And in the book, actually, there's a couple of chapters, one certainly on how to interview, which you did a great job talking about your own personal experience as well, which others could likely relate to. Also talked about what characteristics they look for in a candidate, which is important. Do you need an MBA or additional degrees? I mean, all this stuff goes into it. But also, I mean, my personal experience, I was a radiation oncologist, and you're absolutely right. I had to get outside of the radiation oncology department and really learn about length of stay and readmissions and some of the key terms that chief medical officers learn about in quality, of course, as well. So you're absolutely right. You got to get up and around and be as well-rounded as possible coming into this role. And they certainly appreciate that when you interview. Great. Let's go back to Doug. Doug, one other chapter you wrote in the book was about the what you do in the first 90 days. So once you are that chief medical officer, you've gotten to that position. How does one approach the first 90 days to set yourself up for success?
Yeah, thanks, Rex. I think those first 90 days or first couple of months are really critical. You'll never get this opportunity, those first 90 days. People don't know you yet. Expectations are on the lower side. So you can ask all sorts of dumb questions and people may not think much of it. And you need to take advantage of that. And you need to visit everywhere. You need to explore. You need to ask people what they're proud of, where they think the problems are. So spend a lot of time in that first 90 days really asking all those questions, because you may not get another chance. Later on, they'll expect you that, oh, you must know this or you should know this. But you're early on, so people are going to give you some grace. It's also, you know, the time when you can make your first impressions for physician, nursing leaders that don't know you. So be prepared for that. I always tell my CMOs, you know, when you start visiting with folks, come prepared, know their work, have looked at their bios or their LinkedIn profiles before you sit down and, you know, meeting with some of the stakeholders. That'll give you a lot of mileage if they know that you did your homework ahead of time. You know, those first 90 days, you got to meet with all your stakeholders. So, you know, that's your hospital CEO, the medical staff leadership, the MEC, the CNO, probably the board chair, you know, those sorts of folks. Then you need to make the rounds with what will become your team, your quality improvement leader, your medical staff office leader, your medical directors, department chairs. Seek out the medical staff attorney. Most hospitals have an attorney. And I can't tell you how many times that's really saved me to have a good relationship and be able to pick up the phone and I'm dealing with this situation. What do I need to think about? So find that individual, develop that relationship. And I think, you know, that's the time, those first 90 days where you want to understand the organization's current performance. Now, maybe you've done this during the interview process, but if you haven't, you know, what's their current quality performance? What's their current financial performance? Their accreditation status? You need to have all those facts and figures really at your fingertips as you start into this job. And then it's just kind of walking the halls. And Mark mentioned this as well. This is your opportunity to go to the different parts of the hospital that you haven't frequented. You know, I'm an internist. I got to put on scrubs and go in and watch folks in the OR. And I don't get to do that very often since medical school. So take advantage of being able to really visit the whole hospital and ask questions of everybody, not just the physicians, the line nurses, the maintenance people, your environmental health workers. I mean, you just, everybody's got a story to tell about what they think the hospital does well and where they think there's gaps. So that's your first 90 days. Because I think as you step into that first 90 days, there'll be a lot of pressure to create an improvement plan. People say, well, what are you going to do? What are you going to focus? And I would suggest to CMOs, you really try and resist that. Don't overcommit in that first month or two. Tell people that, hey, I'm doing the rounds, I'm doing my homework. And if you can convince people that your job in those first 90 days is to come up with the plan, you'll talk about the plan in a couple of months after you've done all your homework, you're in a much better position. And that way you haven't overcommitted, because you don't really know where all the potholes are and where the work is until you've really sort of done all that investigation. So do resist that pressure to say, here's my plan, 7 days into the job. It's not fair to do that, but there'll be pressure on folks to do that.
Yeah, thanks, Doug. I mean, great pearls of wisdom. Mark, I want to kick the question to you. I'm sure you have very similar thoughts. How does a chief medical officer set themselves up for success, not only in the first 90 days, but also, let's say, the first year? Many of us last in the position for several years. How do you use that first year, maybe outside of just in that first 90 days, is to set yourself up for success?
Yeah, if I write down three or four key points, Doug already covered them. It's amazing. But you have to realize, when you first enter the organization, almost everybody's rooting for you to succeed. They want you to be successful. I agree. It's a unique time in your career when you can just be a sponge and just listen. And I would listen to as many people as possible and try to figure out the relationships. Don't over confide in anybody. Don't tip your hat. Just say, I'm trying to get to know everyone. Don't make any judgments. Find out what the real power structures are. They're not on the org chart. Find out who people who have the influence are. Absolutely make the rounds. Get out in the community if you can. Talk to the outpatient community-based physicians. And then start to ask, what does success look like for you? When you're talking to somebody for the hospital, and what do you think it looks like from your perspective for me? And you can't ignore whoever's writing your annual evaluation, your boss, the president of the hospital, the CEO. That's going to be realistically the most important dynamic. You ask that person, hey, what do you think in a year from now will make me a successful employee, associate, CMO? Like, what are the things that you're going to rank me on? That's important to know from the outset. You don't want to start going down a path of some, quality improvement and then find out, gee, I really needed you to work on, streamlining this, medical staff project, or I really wanted you to work on potentially preventable complications, or, you didn't go to these meetings. Be very, very transparent and constantly ask for feedback. I'm amazed. I'm always asking for feedback and how difficult it is to really get candid, genuine feedback from people. So you kind of have to always be soliciting feedback. And maybe people are reluctant. They don't want to share exactly, but it's an open book test. Now, the answer is not always that easily forthcoming, but for the first year, you have a certain grace period. You're an unknown quantity. So people will think of you in a much more positive way because you don't have any sort of a track record. And then if you can start delivering, for the chief nurse, what is it I can do for you, for the chief financial officer, for your department heads? If you can start delivering, or at least say, I'm really interested, I'm going to advocate for you. If you can show positive, motion in all of those regards, I think you're going to establish some credibility. Never embarrass anybody. Be very, very careful what you put in emails. Sometimes they'll surface years later. Be very careful about, developing clicks. It's a lonely job. You don't have any other contemporary, at that same level. You might be the only physician executive on the executive leadership team. And so it's almost natural to find one or two or a handful of senior physician colleagues that you want to just vent to or share some frustrations. I would say be very, very careful about that. It's human nature. If you want to do that, find a mentor outside of the hospital. So call up one of us. We've been there. I think that's something we want to develop through our organizations, because you can't just keep it bottled in. But I would be very, having learned this, multiple times, I would be very guarded against confiding in somebody at your own organization. So those are the things that I think would help you become successful in your first 90 and first 360 days.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Those are great. And Doug, going back to you now, you know, actually before I worked with Mark on the Chief Medical Officer Essential Guidebook, you and I collaborated on a book within our own health system and within Providence, the CMO Handbook. And in that book, you authored a great chapter on managing the expectations of your boss. And so how do you manage the expectations or meet the expectations of your boss? Mark alluded to it a little bit. What are your thoughts on that particular topic?
Yeah, I think it starts with, well, who's my boss? Because it may differ. And most of the time for a hospital CMO, it's usually the hospital chief executive. But sometimes that you report to a regional CMO or a system CMO, you may have accountabilities to more than one individual, sort of a reporting structure that's got dual reporting. So I think that's the first question is clearly figure out who is your boss. And then you need to understand what they expect of you. So, I mean, a very frank conversation about what are they looking for from their CMO. And typically that'll be things like medical staff discipline and quality and safety and accreditation. But I'm always surprised when you start teasing through those conversations that sometimes the chief executive has other things that they think that you can change. And, you know, they may want you to manage the OR schedule or some other operational thing. So it's nice to have that really clear expectation by having just a granular conversation. And then I always go back and I try and ask the question of the boss, what's your responsibility? What does your boss want? So if they're the hospital exec, they report to somebody too, typically. I mean, there's a few standalone hospitals, but most of us are aggregated into systems, and even standalone hospitals have a board that they, you know, they report to in some respect. So what's expected of them? You know, they may have responsibility to trim the budget or to grow market share or to improve community relationships. Knowing that, you might be able to step in and help your chief executive in those areas, even though they aren't traditionally the CMO's sort of portfolio of work. And I think that's the best way to meet your boss's expectations when they feel like you're helping them be successful with their own boss. The CMO is a critical piece of that hospital exec team. You're both a translator for clinical stuff. You're an educator. You're the one that typically finds some of those clinical value opportunities around new technology, streamlined care, better integration. So bringing those things forward as good ideas, you're going to really impress your hospital exec when you can bring forward those great ideas. So maybe two last bits of advice on helping with your boss's expectations. One is, don't let them be surprised by bad news. I think Mark referenced this as well. But if you've got a serious safety event or there's been some sort of problem in the hospital or you're going to terminate someone's medical staff privileges, probably ought to give them a heads up. They don't want to learn about that first from the local newspaper or a reporter calling them up. So don't let your boss be surprised. And then the second one is managing up. And I think Mark also mentioned this, but I think it's worth deviling back on this. You know, when things don't go well, the CMO needs to sort of own that responsibility. I was responsible for quality and safety. We didn't meet my standards. We'll do better. And then when things go well, to share that accolade or performance, and this was a team effort. I'm glad we succeeded. That sort of posture is going to really warm the heart of your chief executive or your boss, no matter who they are. So those are the two last little bits of advice. And I think you can be successful with meeting your boss's expectation then.
Great nuggets of knowledge. And I know both of you are very successful in your respective roles as well. And it's for a lot of things that both of you have mentioned. Now, before we conclude, as we're winding down here, I'm going to kick the same question to each one of you. We'll start with Mark. What final advice would you have for physicians out there trying to decide if they want to become a CMO?
Again, read the books, ask current CMOs. But also, if you've not been in a leadership capacity, if you haven't, you know, been a leader in any way, you need to get that experience and that training. And it doesn't have to be within the hospital, doesn't have to be in medicine. And I've given leadership classes, and you know, I was a cub master, I was a scout master. I said there's no better training than trying to hold the attention of about 75, 10, 11, 12-year-old boys who are just pumped full of energy, because you'll learn how to give an engaging presentation. They won't tolerate, you know, sitting and watching a PowerPoint for 15 minutes. Now, let's say that you necessarily have to sing and dance and juggle in front of the MEC, but I think, you know, you'll translate leadership skills from outside the hospital, and they'll help freshen up your presentation, your perspective. It'll just improve your skills. So whether you volunteer at church, a synagogue, or community organization, or at the PTA, you learn something about fundraising, you learn about human nature, you learn about relating to people from various backgrounds. So if you have no leadership experience at all, the first thing I would say is go out and get some. Be a leader, volunteer, get involved, learn about time management, because you're going to have to go and change tracks, change speeds very quickly on the fly if you are a CMO. And then I would say also get, you know, experience within the hospital, serve on various committees, learn about medical staff quality, learn about OPPEs. Nobody wants to do those things. So if you show an interest in it, you will be given all the responsibility and all the tasks you can ever hope for. So, you know, if you're aspiring to be a CMO, go up to your current CMO and say, hey, I want to learn about Joint Commission readiness. I want to understand how denials work. I want to learn about utilization management. Go to the chief nursing officer and teach me how, you know, the clinical ladder works, or shared governance, or decision making, or what nurses have to go through in their first couple of years. And do that for every department. Learn as much as you can. And then when you're done, if you're still interested, if you say, wow, this is incredible, I want to be able to be the conductor of this orchestra. I want to lead the medical staff. I believe in servant leadership. I could see myself doing this for a number of years. This really resonates. Then I think you start looking for opportunities, and you start networking, and you keep trying until you secure a position, and don't forget where you came from. You know, stay humble, stay curious.
Great advice, Mark. Hopefully our audience really eats this advice. It's really good. Thank you. Doug, let's kick it over to you as we wrap things up. Same question. What final advice would you have for physicians out there trying to decide if they want to make that leap and become a chief medical officer?
Hard to follow Mark's answer. I thought that was spot on. I think I would go back to, though, we need folks that have a fire in their belly and really want to do this work. Healthcare's got a lot of problems right now, you know, whether it's staffing or physician morale and burnout or finances. I mean, you just kind of can start going down the list. And we need people that are willing to really roll up their sleeves and do some hard work. One of the things I often tell my CMOs I've worked with is, this is your opportunity to leave a little bit of a legacy. I mean, 80 or 90% of your job is going to be sort of spelled out for you. You've got to do accreditation and quality and safety and medical staff affairs and all those things, but reserve a little bit of time for something you want to put your fingerprints on and say, wow, when Dr. Cook was there, he really improved our patient experience, or he really improved the morale of the hospital climate. I always encourage my CMOs to take some time and think about it. What would they like to be remembered as when they, because they'll sit in this chair for 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, maybe. And if you're proactive about that and you've thought about it and you can actually set some goals around, I want to really leave my imprint in this organization in these ways, that's the kind of leader we need. And if that sort of talk excites you and you say, I can really make a difference in healthcare, then I think you're pointed in the right direction. And they need to read your book, Rex, and then jump right in with the rest of us, because, man, there's plenty of work to be done. So
yeah, listen, Mark and Doug, really enjoying this conversation. And personally, I love being a CMO myself. To those listening and watching, if today's conversation interested you and you want to learn more, the book here, I Want to Be a Chief Medical Officer, Now What? I encourage you to go to Amazon or AAPL website to purchase a copy. Again, hopefully you enjoyed today's podcast as much as I have. With that, back to you, Spencer.
Perfect. Thank you guys so much. That was wonderful, Dr. Hoffman. Great job facilitating. And I think listeners, hopefully you found something great. please go check out the book if you have any interest in the CMO position or already are a CMO and just want to learn more. I think that's never a bad idea. So really appreciate you guys taking time to do this. The thoughtfulness, you can tell you guys have put in a lot of thought to the books and just in your own career. So I really appreciate hearing your perspectives on it. And thanks for being on the Better Care podcast.
Thanks, Spencer.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Better Care podcast. To ensure you never miss an episode, we encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on your preferred platform. Additionally, your ratings and reviews are invaluable in helping us reach a wider audience. Please consider leaving a review, and if you do, email us a screenshot at marketing@evidence.care, and we'll send you a thank you gift. For access to exclusive content and further healthcare insights created by Evidence Care, please visit evidence.care/bettercarepodcast and subscribe to our email list. We appreciate your support and look forward to connecting soon.